You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our second of two podcasts on Duchenne muscular dystrophy hosted by Med Learning Group. This two-part series is geared towards members of the multidisciplinary care team who manage Duchenne muscular dystrophy, including nurses, advanced practice providers, pharmacists, and others. In this episode, we'll be focusing in on some of the newer treatments and gene therapies for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and also be discussing the variety of team members involved in the care of these patients. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. Joining me once again is Joan Mountain, a registered nurse in the neuromuscular division at the University of Rochester in Rochester, New York. Joan has been caring for patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy and other neurologic conditions for over 8 years, and she enjoys sharing and exchanging knowledge in this area with other clinicians to help as many of these patients as possible. Joan, welcome to our discussion.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure being here.
So in our last podcast, we focused on identifying Duchenne muscular dystrophy and some of the patient and clinician burdens associated with the disease. In this one, I want to discuss more about treatment and management, both short and long term. The Duchenne population has high needs as far as, say, equipment, home modifications, etc. So what is your role as a nurse in handling these individual needs for these patients and their families?
So as a nurse, I assist Duchenne families in the steps needed to obtain equipment and services. When there are equipment needs, there's a lot of paperwork that gets completed by the neuromuscular team for the DME or durable medical equipment companies. There's a lot of obtaining signatures and faxing that goes on in the background. On insurance denials, I'm sometimes helping to write letters of medical necessity for the appeals process. I often write letters of medical necessity to support home modifications that are requested from grant programs on behalf of these families to help make their homes accessible. I help provide letters to schools on request for support in modifications to physical education classes or use of stairs versus the elevator at school. And I also aid in communication between the school and our clinic physical therapists. I assist in filling out disability paperwork for families or FMLA paperwork for families. I help identify resources and educational materials that are relevant for each family in their particular situations.
Well, you're truly a valuable team member for these patients, so thank you for doing what you do. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about multidisciplinary care. So for patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, what other types of clinicians are involved along the way?
I would consider the neuromuscular team to be the home base that helps tie all of the care together. And then there are so many others that are needed to be involved along the journey. Genetic counselors needed to help at the time of diagnosis and to discuss family planning and carrier testing with the families. Pulmonology is needed to track respiratory health. They do regular PFT testing. They assess the need for a cough assist equipment, they reinforce the need for flu and pneumonia vaccines, and they help with patients at later stages who require ventilatory support. Sleep medicine gets involved to assess respiratory status while sleeping. Cardiology is necessary. They monitor patients regularly with EKGs, echocardiograms, cardiac MRIs, and they initiate and manage cardiac medications that help slow the progression of the cardiac muscle deterioration. Endocrinology and bone health providers are involved to monitor vitamin D levels, x-rays, and DEXA scans that monitor for fractures. And they also assess the need for hormone therapy in boys with Duchenne who have delayed onset of puberty, which is common for Duchenne patients. Physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy professionals often work with Duchenne patients in their schools. And we have physical therapists in our clinic who perform regular assessments to monitor progression and function, to provide data to support the need for therapies and assistive devices. Orthopedic and surgical care are often needed for common issues that affect patients with DMD, like scoliosis or ankle contractures. GI nutrition providers help monitor for swallowing difficulties and help manage weight gain that happens so easily with the corticosteroid use that is the standard of care for Duchenne patients. palliative care providers are very helpful to address family and patient coping and the discomfort and pain and emotional needs of the Duchenne patient at every stage of their disease. Social workers can aid families in working through financial and insurance problems, as well as helping to secure overnight stays and transportation to get to their medical appointments. At some point, it's likely that patients with Duchenne will have to seek emergency care. So while we hope emergency care providers are educated in the special needs of the Duchenne population, there are printed resources and laminated cards that are provided to the DMD patients so that they have that information to carry with them wherever they go.
So multidisciplinary care, the term itself is kind of used loosely in medicine everywhere and sometimes refers to maybe a primary care doctor and a specialist and a nurse, maybe, you know, small teams like that. But with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, you just mentioned upwards of a dozen caregivers that are often needed for these kids. So continuing on these lines, what benefits does this type of team-based care, this multidisciplinary care, offer, particularly for Duchenne patients?
When boys with Duchenne muscular dystrophy have regular access to the multidisciplinary care model, they're able to get all of the recommended early care needs. They're able to start early corticosteroids. They have the regular monitoring and assessments, and it leads to a delay in that loss of ambulation. It leads to preserving the upper limb function. It leads to reduced need for scoliosis surgery. It leads to improved cardiopulmonary function. It delays the need for invasive ventilation, and ultimately it leads to increased survival times. So there's data that shows boys born after 1990, the median survival age was about 28 years. And for boys born before 1970, the survival age was about 18 years old.
So let's shift gears into some of the individual treatments. So over the past several years, there have been a handful of, say, exon-skipping pharmacologic agents that have been approved, as well as a gene therapy recently within the past year. Do you have any kind of role with any of these newer agents in terms of maybe administration or following up on side effects and monitoring or anything else?
As far as the exon skipping agents, I don't interact too much with those, maybe helping keep track of infusion appointments or if there's any reactions or anything like that. We help to coordinate follow up on that. But with the gene therapy program, I am involved in a lot of the preparation and the legwork that goes into getting that patient to the point of treatment. So when a patient is potentially eligible for gene therapy, I help coordinate the blood sample collection for determining the eligibility based on whether the patient has antibodies to the viral vector that is used to deliver the gene therapy. I work closely with our medication access team to make sure that we have all of the necessary data to submit for insurance authorization for this extremely expensive treatment. We don't want to have anything missing when we go for that approval. I work with the families and with our scheduling and social work teams to help coordinate all of the appointments that are needed surrounding the gene therapy treatment. There is an intense follow-up schedule post-gene therapy, and the families sometimes need extra support in keeping track of all of those appointments. We do expect some side effects afterwards, so the families need to know that there's someone who's going to answer. We always have someone on call, someone for them to contact if need be, quickly.
So you use the term legwork kind of in the context of, you know, the new gene therapy out there and some of the treatments. More in a general sense, I'm sure there's a lot of legwork behind the scenes that the average person doesn't see or understand with regard to Duchenne muscular dystrophy. So what are some of these things that you coordinate, particularly from a nursing standpoint, that a lot of us might not know about in managing this disease?
So I see my role as more of a care coordinator. I interact with all levels of our neuromuscular team and with other specialty teams and with the patients and the families to provide the best care we can for the DMD patients. When families reach out with a problem or question, I can help problem solve. I can be that extra point of contact to help reinforce information that maybe they didn't catch all of that in their appointments, or if they need additional information. There's a lot that we do in the background, by phone, through electronic messaging and faxing, with laboratories, with DME companies, with pharmacies, with schools, and with other doctor's offices on behalf of our patients. Nurses are often the ones that are tracking the to-do list. So Duchenne patients have, you know, regular, maybe every 6 months or every year, PFTs that they need to do for pulmonology, and annual x-rays are suggested, echocardiograms. So all of those things we kind of track and make sure that they're keeping up with those. And if not, we kind of give a little nudge to that specialty and help them get those appointments.
So you clearly put a lot of work forth, and you're, you know, constantly in communication with schools and DME companies and therapists, as you mentioned. From a patient standpoint, what is it like for you as a clinical nurse to put so much work forth and then actually meet with the patient at a clinical visit, and you can actually connect with the patient face-to-face in person? What is that like for you?
Well, it's really wonderful to meet with the patients and the families, to put faces to the names, get to know the boys and their personalities in the clinic. I think it helps the patients and the families to meet us and put a face to us as well, the face behind the person that they get messages from and the phone calls they receive. It just gives a warmer, more personable feel to the interactions and helps with the comfort level on both sides.
So kind of in that vein, let's talk a little bit about open communication and shared decision making. Do you find that most of your patients and their parents, because these are most often young children, is it an open sharing type of relationship, or do you have to kind of get them to open up about it? What are initial feelings from patients and their families when they come to discuss this with you?
I think the families who attend appointments regularly get to know the providers, they get to know the team, and they're easily able to message back and forth or call and get answers to their questions. It's the patients who have trouble getting to appointments, maybe have a long distance to travel or trouble with transportation. And it's those patients that I put some extra work into to see what I can do to help them get to their appointments. We have that time set aside for them to discuss problems or concerns or bring up questions. And that's just the most important thing, to be able to give them that time and get them into clinic.
So let's finish up on this. How would you describe the current outlook for patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy? Do you think we're in a good spot and we're getting better with aspects of identification and treatment? Or are there specific needs and goals that we need to hone in on a little bit further, maybe over the next few years?
I would say the current outlook is better than it has ever been, but with plenty of room for improvement. My short-term wish list would be improvements as far as increasing the number of states or other countries who do newborn screening for DMD. It's a simple test and easy to add, so we need more states to get on board with that. Expanded approval of the current gene therapy, which is only FDA approved right now for 4 and 5 years old patients. So younger and older patients need to have access to those gene therapies. And improving the insurance situation, I think that's global, but better and easier insurance coverage for the treatments and equipment that the Duchenne patients very much need.
Well, thank you very much, Joan. It's great to hear about your critical role in managing patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and you've made it very clear that it most certainly takes a team of caregivers to treat this condition. But that's all the time we have for today. So once again, I'd like to thank our nurse expert, Joan Mountain, for taking the time to speak with us today about Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us. Hopefully you're able to turn into our first podcast in the series, in which we talked a little bit about identification and some of the disparities in care for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our educational grant supporter, Pfizer Incorporated, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity. Thank you very much and have a great day.